So we're talking about contempt of cop. It kind of reminded me of that old Stones song, Heartbreaker. There was a time when anti-police sentiments in society were running pretty high. And some of it had to do with, you know, like the Serpico case and many other well-publicized cases of police corruption. But that improved, I believe, at least in my anecdotal experience. I certainly have no empirical evidence to prove that. But in my own experience, I noticed that there was kind of a shift, and cops tried harder, and local communities were giving cops more of a break. And it became less about, you know, that the cops are always right, and anybody who gets pulled over by a cop deserves it just by virtue of the fact that they've been pulled over by a cop. I mean, there was enough oversight and community involvement and readjustment on the part of police departments. And I think it really did come down to police working hard at improving their reputation and the level of professionalism. And as a result, it improved their reputation. And in turn, it brought a greater degree of professionalism to police departments. So, I mean, I think of it all as a good thing. But then there is also this ongoing issue of contempt of cop and whether or not police can arrest you just because they don't like your attitude. Well, say they can arrest you, but whether they can lawfully arrest you, or whether it's the kind of thing that should prevent a cop from being able to continue in his or her job. And that brings us to the videotape we had played in the first hour of a woman who was arrested for taping a police officer, four cops actually, doing a bust seemingly on the side of the road in front of her house. And one of the four cops just didn't like the fact that she was videotaping. Three states make that explicitly illegal under wiretapping laws, that they don't even allow you to videotape a police officer in the public performance of their duties. Other states have proposed that, with pressure, you know, or suggestions from different police departments, that this should be illegal for anybody to ever oversee the police officer on videotape, where you have evidence of the things you're saying. I think that's a mistake, personally, and I don't think it leads to more liberty. We'll get back to your calls and comments. For Professor George DeAngelis, professor of criminology at Park University, somebody who's been studying the contempt of cop since he was a cop, back in the 1970s, and we'll get to all that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's kick off this hour of calls with Professor George DeAngelis with Barry, who is a working police officer. Are you on duty right now, Barry?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, glad to have you. Thanks for jumping into the conversation. Where are you on all this?
I'm sorry?
Where are you on all of this?
Well, my point of view, Ian, is the fact that it is extremely frustrating when you have people that refuse to comply. And it's not our job to harass and annoy, but rather to keep the public safe. And one of the things that I try to explain to people who might not grasp that is the fact that in the state of Texas, simply failing to comply with a lawful order given by a peace officer is a crime. That's all the reason I need to detain and arrest you.
So explain lawful order.
Basically, anything that would not put you in direct harm, would not cause you to violate any other laws blatantly. Anything an officer basically demands for you to do while in control of a scene or otherwise that you refuse to do would be a crime.
So you could, if I'm standing on my front lawn and a police officer pulls up in front of my house and says, go back inside your house, I have to do it.
Legally, the way the law is written, to the letter of the law, yes.
Why?
It is an arrestable offense in the state of Texas.
Now, but why? What? I'm just saying, so why, if you pull up and you just say, I want you inside that house, where are my rights anywhere in that conversation? If you just decide you want me inside that house, because that's what happened in this case here of the videotape we were playing back from Rochester. He didn't tell anybody else to go back inside their house, only the woman with the video camera.
And you know, and I haven't seen that video, but you're right. It is clear that he was only communicating to her. You know, me personally, I don't get out of my squad car without my camera on and my wireless mic going,
because amen,
that's there
brother
to protect me.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't, you know, obviously I would have to be able to explain and describe in great detail why I felt it was immediately necessary for you to go inside. And generally that would be a health and safety issue for you. And obviously being charged with having to protect the public, you know, regardless of whether or not you're immediately in my crime scene or not, you're now another person that I consciously and subconsciously have to worry about. I now have to know, where are you? What are you doing? Are you standing in the middle of the street? Are you going to come try and take my gun away?
Yeah, I get that.
That happened before.
I get that. You know? But it seems like that's a reasonable, there has to be reason involved with that. That a police officer who thinks at any second somebody's going to be grabbing their gun, even if they're 15 or 20 feet away, it may be time for them to not be a police officer anymore. It's beyond reason to think that at every second you pull over, you have to have everybody go back inside of their houses or you won't feel safe.
Well, and that's very true. And there are inherent dangers that go along with this job that you have to accept the day you swear to do your duties. And, you know, obviously, this is what I was born to do. I don't want to toot my own horn. I'm not.
No, I get it.
You know,
get it.
Things are going to happen. Things are going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. But you don't want to intentionally let somebody put themselves in harm's way. And it's,
right.
It's my personal opinion that, you know, in this particular case, that's a little absurd.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's just ridiculous.
Demanding the woman with the video camera go inside her house because the police officer says he's got a Kevlar vest on and she's in pajamas and bare feet 15 feet away. And he says, I don't feel safe because you're videotaping me. That just seems.
You're in no way, shape or form an immediate danger to anybody.
Very good. Okay.
So any arrest
that comes from that becomes contempt of cop. Bottom line, Barry, and I'm not asking you to incriminate anybody else, but that would be where you might even turn to a colleague and go, you know what, dude, that was like you were just arresting them because they were ticking you off, not because they were actually doing anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and everybody is guilty of it to some extent. You know,
right.
There's always a reason. You can write somebody a ticket for just about anything.
Right.
But is it really worth the hassle? Do you really want to, you know?
You can indict a ham sandwich, as they say, if you really want to.
There you go.
Okay. I appreciate that. Now, before you go, Barry, thank you so much for being so candid. Professor George DeAngelis, did you have anything you wanted to add in this?
Yes. I've been a Texas peace officer for 28 years, and no disrespect to Barry, but I've never heard that statute.
What statute that?
About disobeying a police officer.
A lawful order?
That
Barry?
You're talking about. I'm not aware of any state law. Now, you know, I could be corrected. Maybe, you know.
Barry, what's the statute for that? Is there a number for that we could?
You know, I would have to go back and actually look it up to It was taught to us under some of the force continuum classes that we've taken, and it was explained to me, and it is strictly enforced with our agency, and I know that DeAngelo, I'm sorry, is that your name?
DeAngelis.
I'm sorry. But the thing that you touched on is always having to maintain control of the situation, so I don't... It was just explained to me that that's how it always works. You fail to comply, and you will go to jail, because where I work, there is no backup. There is no officer right down the road. There is no immediate help. It's you are the lone ranger.
Right. It's very interesting. Barry, I thank you for that, and thank you for holding on as long as you did, and appreciate you listening to us while you're on the job. I hope we keep you company, and all the police officers out there for that matter. But let me go back to what you said there, Professor. If you would be surprised if there's a law, a statute law that says a police officer can tell a citizen anything they want. I mean, like a lawful order is anything they want them to do. And if they don't do that, then they can get, then the citizen can be arrested for that.
That broad. Yes.
Yeah, that broadly.
Yeah.
Now, if it was part of a force continuum where there was a dangerous situation, that would be maybe a different story.
That's a different story.
Okay.
That is correct.
All right. Let's go to Steve, who's in Minneapolis. on a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Professor George DeAngelis. We're talking about contempt of cops. Steve?
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Thank you, Ian, and for George. First of all, just two things. One, after I hang up, can he comment on the Indiana Supreme Court ruling, May 19th, 2011, where a police officer, if they want to enter a house for any reason or no reason at all, a homeowner cannot deny access to the police officer without, even if they don't have a warrant. And then I want him to comment on that. And then also, I was in a situation where I got sucker punched outside a bar in the neighboring suburb. And I filed the report. They picked up the guy. I ID'd him. And basically, the guy, it's been 2 years. He did not go to his arraignment, skipped that. There's a warrant for his arrest. I've been into a disagreement with the attorney who works for the city over a few things. One, the police officer said I was extremely intoxicated on his first paragraph of my statement, which I blew a .06. I asked him to give me a breathalyzer before I got stitched up to see if I could drive my car back from where I got stitched up. I blew a .06. I was totally coherent, not belligerent. And instead of charging with a third degree assault, he got charged with fifth degree assault. And I got in arguments with the attorney.
You know what? This is going to get into an area that I don't think I'm just going to make a judgment
call
here.
That's like collusion. You have this.
I get that, but that may be outside of his legal expertise here to talk about
on the Indiana Supreme Court.
Let's do that because I looked that up while you were talking, Steve, and it's interesting. Indianapolis overturning a common law dating back to the Magna Carta. The Indiana Supreme Court ruled Thursday, this was back in May, that Hoosiers have no right to resist unlawful police entry into their homes. 3-2 decision said that if a police officer wants to enter a home for any reason or no reason at all, a homeowner cannot do anything to block the officer's entry. Boy, that's shocking to me. I don't know why I hadn't heard about that before. George?
Yes. We were just talking about that in class, and that just seems to be really, you know, like way out of our way of government, you know, the way our, I mean, that just kind of like nullifies the Fourth Amendment.
But said here, yeah, it does. It completely does. Well,
yeah, I mean, why even have search warrants? Why have magistrates? Why even have probable cause? You know, just throw it all away. We just seem to be going in the wrong direction here. And it's that is really, really strange. That just comes out of left field. I just don't understand that one.
They say it's consistent with laws preventing violence, that the idea here that by resisting the police officers, you are creating a violent situation, that you're better off to let the cops come in, search the house, do whatever they want, and then address it afterward, not beforehand. And that would prevent violence. That seems like a stretch to me, but let me go to Max in the on the Skype line in Winnipeg on Coast to Coast for Professor Charles DeAngelis, Professor of Criminology. Max?
Hi there.
Hi.
First of all, you know, I give the police a lot of credit. It's a very difficult job to go from one emergency to another. And the other thing is whenever, they have to act on reflex and training.
Sure.
And whenever they're called into court 2 years later, everything is supposed to be remembered. But regardless of that, I don't know if you're familiar. There was an incident at the Vancouver airport with a taser. And interestingly enough, I heard it first on Coast to Coast, of all things, at night. A fellow who was a limousine driver, he happened to tape this incident on a camera. The police took it away, and the fellow actually called the Coast to Coast and mentioned this. He fought to get legally to get the camera back, and the police never thought it would ever, you know, that nobody was taping it. In the meantime, the poor guy, he was tasered 5 times, and it was well documented. They jumped on him. He died. The RCMP, that's the horsemen or the Mounties,
right.
They had an investigation where they whitewashed it, and it went on for years. I see in Wikipedia here, finally, I think they basically pieced off the family. The final inquiry report released Friday on June 2010 concluded the RCMP was not justified in using a taser, and the officers later deliberately misrepresented their actions to the investigators. It came out accidentally that they had planned on the way in the car to actually taser the guy before they got there. And I mean, this was an obstruction, and the poor fellow was killed. So I'm just curious to what the speaker has to say about this.
Yeah, even in laws in Canada, but that's interesting that if they're even talking about doing something like that on the way over, that would seem to cross the line. George DeAngelis, you have a thought on that?
Yes, that just seems to me to be criminal. That is just, that's beyond just misconduct. I mean, that's criminal conduct there. That's beyond, an officer that's just engaged in a violation of departmental rules and regulations. That is sure. That is criminal.
When does a police officer's conduct cross the line from a policy misconduct to a criminal behavior?
When it violates the law.
But how can you tell that? Because it seems like a lot of those are kind of intended to be ambiguous. To give the police the proper elbow room. So
right.
how can you effectively tell when a police officer has crossed the line?
The mistake of the heart and mistake of the mind.
Okay.
When it's a deliberate, intentional act to violate the law. I mean, you can accidentally, not intentionally, your conduct, violated departmental rules, which also happens to be a violation of the law, but it wasn't an act that you intended to do, through ignorance or improper training or whatever. But if you deliberately intended to commit that act, that is that's a lot different. And
so that's the answer I was looking for. You said intent of the head and intent of the heart.
Yes.
Okay. Together.
Yes, you meant well, but you still you made a mistake. As opposed to someone who deliberately intended to harm someone or intended to gain personally from the act, like stealing and things like that.
They knew it was wrong and they had intent to do something wrong.
And
they had both, right?
They had both, yes.
Sir. That's interesting. Very good. Bob is in Tempe, Arizona, west of the Rockies. We can get him in before the bottom of the hour on Coast to Coast. Bob?
Hi.
Hey.
I'm a freelance photographer and around my hometown of Tempe, I really don't have too much of a problem, but occasionally I get up into Scottsdale, which is immediately north of Tempe, and anytime I've seen something where it was a police activity, including one where there were 12 officers with guns drawn and three guys in a parking lot with their hands up, I stopped and was photographing that incident from about 50 yards away, and I had one police officer notice me, and there were people standing within probably 10 yards of this officer. He was yelling at me that I was in a very unsafe place. And I kept taking pictures of him yelling at me. But it's not videotaping. It's still photography.
Right.
But every time I've been in Scottsdale and photographed any activities the Scottsdale police have been doing, I have been stopped, questioned as to what I'm doing, and which I usually refer to very politely, I'm standing in a public right-of-way taking pictures of public servants doing their job.
Interesting. And that's happening more and more. There's actually another case like that of a police news crew that was doing what they usually do, but a police officer just decided he didn't want them there, and just because he didn't want them there, they end up arresting the reporter and the videographer. It wasn't in Scottsdale, Arizona, but it was somewhere else. All right, so let's just then adjourn on the subject for the moment. But George, we can count on you for another half hour, and then we'll just go to open lines for the rest of the show. But you're good for another 30 minutes or so?
Yes, Ian, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, I hope you're having fun. You're enjoying this?
I'm enjoying it. I really am. Thank you.
Okay, this is very helpful. Professor George DeAngelis, and the subject is contempt of cop. Is it on the rise? Is it not? And a lot of freedom sites are talking about this case out of Rochester, New York, where a woman was arrested in her pajamas barefoot for videotaping a police officer. She's on her front lawn taking a videotape of the cops, and that's where we'll pick it up. Coming up on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So next half hour, we'll get our last couple of calls in for George DeAngelis, professor of criminology, talking about contempt of cop. Then open lines for this last hour, and we'll go anywhere you want to go coming up in the last hour of Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. This bacon looks really good. I had to go to biggerbetterbacon.com because I heard it in the commercial, and I'm like hypnotized. It's awesome. There's really good bacon there. I have to find some of that. Too late to get it before the end of the show. But, you know, after we get done with open lines, remember, if you missed that first hour, you can always go back and listen to it coming up on Streamlink, or what is now called Coast Insider, which is also where I'm going to be coming up on Tuesday night. I'll be doing the hosting duties on Coast Insider this coming Tuesday night for the chat. Hope you join us. Let's get to the phones where we've still got some people hanging on for Professor George DeAngelis. Joel is east of the Rockies. He's in Texas on Coast to Coast. We're talking about contempt of cop. Joel?
Well, we got some contempt of Constitution here, George and Ian, like George's comments on it. Number one is we've got intimidation of a witness. We've got evidence tampering and tampering with a witness. We've got official oppression, where he's using color of law under Title 18, 241 and 242, which basically states if two or more, of course, that can be one if he's got a supervisor. If anyone intimidates, injures, oppresses, or threatens any person in the free exercise of right or privilege, it's a 10,010 federal felony. And so we've got evidence being gathered there of a public altercation, and this requires the judgment of facts gathered by a witness, which is a seems to be a jury determination, not a police determination. And so the destruction of that evidence also under some statutes is a 2002 year at hard labor felony by the policeman or anyone destroying that evidence. And that
if
document,
the police confiscate a videotape and then destroy it, you're saying?
Yeah. Right. As anybody in custody of any document or anything in evidence, this gets into very heavy stuff. And so these policemen better have a very good excuse for doing what they're doing.
That's an interesting point. Thank you, Joel. Well articulated. Dan is in Orlando, Florida on Coast to Coast. Dan?
Hi. I first want to bring up the fact that I don't know if you're aware of it, but there was actually a story regarding this Rochester incident you're talking about, where after the woman was arrested, apparently some citizens of Rochester gathered for a community meeting at some sort of community center. And there's actually video and a story, which I did email to you, which shows that these police officers apparently were issuing tickets to cars in front of this meeting because they had parked more than 12 inches away from the curb or whatever the violation was.
Right.
And that, to me, goes to the issue of free speech, where these clearly they were writing these tickets because they were trying to retaliate against the individuals who were expressing their First Amendment rights at the community center.
Yeah.
And to me, that's rather sinister and chilling. And I would take issue with your claim that 99% of the police officers were good guys who followed the law, because how many police officers, I think they said there were three or four that night, how many police officers intervened to aid that woman? None. And whenever you see any of these incidents on YouTube or wherever, none of the police officers ever intervene to try to do the right thing. So
Hold on a second. Let's be clear about this, too. I mean, I'm with you to a point on that. Do the right thing may be a lot easier in hindsight than in real time. So you could make a fair argument, Dan, that the other cops who don't step up, and again, we're talking about the videotape, which you can see if you go back to coasttocoastam.com, you can link up to this videotape. But we played the audio several times of one police officer out of four getting his nose out of joint. He kind of nuts up on this woman who's standing on the front lawn videotaping. But that could only make the situation worse if they start an open debate between the cops right there on the side of the road. In a way,
worse for who?
Well, I guess
for the police, because the police stick together, right? That's the bottom line.
But you could also create a riot conditions. You've got a lot of people who are out on their front lawns. You've got a lot of people. I mean, I think it's wrong. You know, I think it's wrong. So let's not debate whether that guy harassing the woman with the video camera is right. He's wrong, in my opinion, for doing that. But the other cops, well, let me ask George DeAngelis on that. What should the other police officers have done? George, you're the professor of criminology.
I think you're both right. And let me qualify that. I think it's depends on the totality of the circumstances. What happened as a result of the Rodney King incident? You remember with the videotape, with all the officers are standing by while the beatings takes place.
Right.
Is that there's a new civil tort that has been born out of that incident, and it's called non-actor liability. And what that does is, officers who do not come forward to stop such egregious conduct are now just as liable as if they took part in it.
Right.
And so it's putting officers on notice that they do have a responsibility to intervene and stop illegal activities by their counterparts. And so in a situation of this nature that we just saw in Rochester, an officer could have just told him, you know, get in the car and be quiet or whatever. Had there been a more tense situation, as you were alluding to, then the thing would have been just to get in the car and take off.
And sort it out later.
Yeah, and point it out later as a training issue or a complaint to a supervisor.
Right, which
so
would be
depend on the situation.
On the situation, but I think Dan's point is fair. I still would say I don't know what the percentage is of cops. I think what I'm saying is I think 99% of cops want to do their jobs right. 99% of cops are out there to do the right thing.
That's right.
Until he can come up with other statistics that say otherwise, I'll stand by that. I think most cops do, but the ones that aren't, they got to get them out of there. I think Charles is in New Hampshire on Coast to Coast. Charles.
Thank you very much, Ian and George. This is really a real hot issue, and it's not going to go away. I'm really glad that you brought it up. In fact, I picked up the fact that you were going to discuss this on the Daily Paul, so we both go to that site occasionally.
Yeah.
Just a quick brief comment before I share a few things that are going on here in New Hampshire. To the police officer, and I'm a trained firefighter, and believe me, this is not a knock on all the police officers, but this gentleman who expressed that, you know, there's a lot of tension and they're afraid, I think a lot of that, 50-70% of this disconnect is coming from this war on drugs in this country. And we better get a grip on this because it is out of hand and it's causing a lot of wasted resources of our wonderful police staff and really skewing the relationship between the regular citizens and the police. Now, specifically on the issue of videotaping, well, this ain't going to go away. This is happening all over. And I'll tell you, in New Hampshire, we're doing it all over. In fact, in New Hampshire, there's what's called the Free State Project, and that is where people are coming from all over the country to participate in trying to get liberty in our lifetime, and there's many different facets of the Free State Project. You can go to freekeen.com and check out a lot of the activity that's going on, but one of the most recent organizations or groups is called Cop Blocking. If you go to copblock.org or Facebook, Cop Block, you can see exactly what's going on. And what cop blocking is that we actually go out in groups of about a dozen different parts of New Hampshire right now, and it's been done in other states, where we, with our cameras, and we're monitoring the police to find out where they're just, you know, maybe pulling people over for just, you know, really small kind of stuff, because a lot of these pullovers are for revenue-based generating and really not out, you know, doing, you know, solving real serious crime. But when they get, when the police are pulling people over, there'll be six people there videotaping it just because of police accountability. And yes, and this is a new organization, not even 2 months old, and you'd be amazed at what's happening. And unlike our fellow police officer in Texas was stating, you would be amazed of exactly what the cops, the police officers are doing. I mean, a lot of them are just hightailing it
and getting out of there, basically. All right. Well, let's give a little room here to George. Charles, that's very interesting. I appreciate that. And it'd be interesting to see whether anybody does a cop block thing in Illinois or Massachusetts or Maryland. You'd have to show up with a lot more cameras, I think, before you end up getting people arrested. But Professor DeAngelis, you heard Charles there talking about New Hampshire and the idea that this is a freedom issue for citizens not an anti-cop thing per se. Well, yeah. I don't know quite how we can always sort out that, but go ahead.
Well, I think it's natural, you know, in America to associate, you know, something that the police are fighting against, if you will, if that's the correct word, is a First Amendment right. And to some degree, I think it is a First Amendment right. And so I don't have a problem with it coming from that angle. I don't think, you know, if I was, the chief of police, I wouldn't have a problem with the community filming my officers as long as it was not interfering with their duties or putting right. their safety at stake, you know, because I don't have anything to hide. Right. So.
And as we learned from the dashboard cams, again, it ends up working in the police officer's favor over and over again, where there's a videotape that shows them doing, following their job. It prevents people from being able to say, well, that's not what I heard the cop say, because you have a videotape and you can prove it right there. And the jury's, you know, looked at it and said, nope, your fault. Kevin's in St. Paul, wildcard line on Coast to Coast for Professor George DeAngelis. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, hey guys, thank you very much. I'm really split on this. I mean, kind of emotionally split, because I want to believe that, you know, police officers are good guys, as yep. you said, the vast majority of them. I mean, this is just, I mean, I want to come from this. I'm just an ordinary guy, you know, that's not out breaking the law or getting arrested or whatever. But I really feel like there's a massive lack of trust between all levels of government, and even right down to the most important one, which would be that local police department. And if there was any doubt of that, just that last phone call where,
right.
you know, teams of people are going out to try and keep the cops honest. I mean, that's troubling. That's just amazing in a way.
But if it leads to better training and it leads to better, you know, a clearer mission by the police and a better understanding of, you know, what these stops are supposed to be about, then isn't mission accomplished?
Well, yeah, but I'm coming at it from the other way. I'm saying, what's the motivation for that? I mean, there's just a massive lack of trust between, you yeah. know, the general public and the police, if that sort of thing is taking place. And without question, in the case of the woman,
right.
Mrs. Good or whatever, or the case of people going out to block police, I mean, there's an inherent signal there from the citizens to the police that, you know what, we don't trust you, and we're here to make damn sure that you're not getting out of line because we don't trust you. I mean, that's just inherent in, you know, in pulling out the video camera and taping.
Let me tell you a quick story, because in the time we have left. So, Kevin, you're a neighbor of mine somewhere here in St. Paul, right? So I love the police, and I support the St. Paul Police Department in every way I can, financially and whatever. But there is something, I see it happen all the time. I live not too far away from a police changing station, and hand to God, I'm not making this up. When the shift change hours, you know, there's three different hours when there is a shift change for the 8-hour shifts in the police department. I watch cops race to the shift change station at like 60 miles an hour. I see them sometimes throw their lights on going down the street only to turn into where the shift change, where they go back into their, you know, they get to get out of their blues and get back into their civilian car and go home. Now, I don't know what the emergency is that allows them to throw their lights on, go back into the car. But my suspicion is it's 2 minutes before the shift change and they want to get out of there. And so I think,
well,
you know,
human.
Yeah, they're human, but those are those times again that I can't go 60 miles an hour down that road because I want to get home. You know, I can't do that. So I think that adds to that sense of like, you're not supposed to get a badge just to be able to have more fun or break laws when you feel like it's your turn. You know what I mean? But I know what you're saying. There's an emotional tug on me that too. George, we've got a couple of police officers who want to get in on this. Can we go ahead and grab one of those?
Sure.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Keith is a former cop in Southern California. Keith?
Ian, it's nice to talk to you.
And to you.
Chief DeAngelis, it's a pleasure to talk to someone who's dedicated their life to fighting the good fight.
Thank you, Keith.
Absolutely. I just wanted to talk about this Miss Good, who she, you know, in California, you know, whenever you, there's the law that says that you can't interfere with an investigation. Filming from your yard is not interfering with an investigation. The officers were out in front on the street. She was filming. She wasn't interfering with her investigation. The investigation was with the person in the car, not her. And for him to step up and shine his light in their camera and arrest her was absolutely, there was no interference with her investigation. And it just blows me away that she would be arrested and taken to jail for that.
Nothing you would have done as a former cop.
Absolutely not. I would absolutely love someone filming whenever I was out on a stop, because that stops any complaints that I would have gotten, because I had gotten them over. I got to the point where I carried a tape recorder in my pocket and a video camera and my microphone to stop the complaints that I got. I was righteously out there trying to do the good thing, and it's just unbelievable that somebody could take their, it's their civil rights. She got taken away and hauled off to jail
for her civil rights. George, what do you have to say here to Keith?
I think Keith is absolutely right, and we need more officers like him. I'm sorry to hear that he's not in law enforcement anymore. And, that's exactly the type of officer that we need.
We got Dave, who is a current cop, so we can all say thank you to Dave, who's a current cop in Illinois. Dave? Go ahead, Dave.
Well, you know, I was listening to the guy from the Free State Movement talking a little while ago, you know, about blocking cops and how they don't like a lot of the laws against marijuana and whatnot. And, you know, the fact is that the police aren't the ones who make those laws.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of police officers, you know, they don't have a moral problem with marijuana. The problem for most of us is that it's against the law, and the people who are trafficking it, tend to be, you know, they tend towards crime, and they tend to sometimes be violent individuals. Now, I'm not talking about the users. Everybody knows that, you know, somebody using marijuana is less likely to be violent than somebody using alcohol.
Right.
All those arguments are valid. But, you know,
don't miss his point. Don't miss his point. His point is just he thinks that because it's illegal, it creates the environment for bad people to get in and traffic on it. It's kind of the argument. It's sort of about prohibition. When we put in prohibition, the mobsters moved in, right?
Yes, and I agree with that, okay? Right. But his solution to that is to go out and mess with the police. And
how is that messing with police to videotape them?
No,
how is that messing with a police officer?
But having a mob of 12 people come up to you while you're in the middle of your business and not knowing if the person you're dealing with is going to be armed, you know, it's a distraction. And,
well, this distraction
is a problem.
Okay,
just like your last caller, I wouldn't have a problem with somebody videotaping me. I mean, I'm in Illinois,
okay,
where it's illegal, you know.
Right, but I think that's where it comes down to is, and David, I appreciate that when you say a distraction, that you shouldn't have to deal with that. And I understand that, but there's, for 47 other states, there's not a legal response that somebody could make toward a distraction of their job. But George, appreciate all of your time. And did you have something you want to wind up here with before we go to open lines?
Well, I just wanted to do is reiterate what you have said. And is that, you know, the majority of our officers out there are good, honest people, and that they have a passion for their work, and that God bless them for doing the job that they do.
Very good. Well, we'll go to open lines. Wherever that ends up going is where it's going to end up going. It might end up being right back where we are. But, George, thank you for all of your time tonight. And link up to that video if you want to go take a look at it at Coast to Coast. Where we're going to go next, it's your turn. Coast to Coast AM, give you the numbers next. This is Ian Punnett.